interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 424. Here we are, still going on. Summertime, coming into summertime. Hope all your plants are in the ground. Seeing some anomalies this year in the plants, but we'll see. The tall, deep-rooted yellow flowers with the tall stems seem to be coming on time, but lots of other things are not. I'm not quite sure what all that means. Anyway, we're going to find some stuff out today. We're going to do a little bit of chemistry again later, as finding out that there's stuff around you that may very well be some of the answers that we've needed. For those of you that already know that, I hope you've been getting toned up on what you have to do with taking nature and utilizing the bounty that it has to offer. And so this guy didn't. William Shakespeare. No, I'm not talking about a guy a couple hundred years ago. This is a guy that just was the first man to get COVID jabs, and he dies and out of the UK. He was 81. And the only reason why I'm grabbing this story up was because of the continuing denial. And it requires that we're going to have to be looking more. Those of us that are asymptomats are going to have that continuing better focused word in our mouth. As if I can say the word gaslighted, you're going to be continually gaslighted, and everybody around you, most people around you, will be susceptible to the psyop. They'll be susceptible to the presentation and the perception management. And so that's what we're going to be up against. And you're not going to be able to convince those people. I've been telling you that when you get into a subjective belief system, you can't just attack it. I keep telling this to people in the so-called legal side of this. It's really not legal because there is no law. There isn't even legal. It's this, the closest I can get to it is this reflexive thing that the system is doing through the Bar Association. So we have to approach this at a total different issue. You can't even attack them directly. And so my thoughts, where I've come from, through the studies I've done and watching other people fail, I've adjusted what I've been doing as I went to try to bring us a better position, not knowing this would actually happen, but knowing this would be coming as far as not this as in COVID, but an imposition through a martial law, if you will, I knew it was medical. I didn't know it would be this. I did predict it coming in, but what I'm saying is that I'm talking 20, 30 years ago. I could see that there was going to be this building condition. You could watch it. It was already back then. You could see it. It was building into a finale, if you will, of control. And so I've been attempting to try and work through all that all these years. Don't know why, just started doing it. There was just a violation to my senses, and I realized over time, it was the government that was coming to take anything I had, and for no good reason. And then when I realized when they blame you for something, they're calling you a criminal when you're not, I realized I was dealing with the ultimate criminal. And they're in a position of authority, and they're in a position where people believe it, that it's not an authority. They believe in those people as authority when it's really authorita. It's people getting away with crime. And then I started to notice how the system itself is self-healing in a way. And if I can jump quickly, that's partly why in the Tennessee matter, in the Tennessee case, we did an administrative challenge to the jurisdiction, to the administration of justice in that whole state. And we got the answer that I was expecting, but now we have it in writing. It's that corrupt. You can predict it and get the answer back. And the problem for us as a people is not saying, oh, well, they're corrupt, we can't go there. What are we going to do about this state underneath a state? The state over a state is what it is. And no one really pays attention to how that works. And it gives itself, it's self-healing, it's a self-healing system. It's a difficult problem to approach. I say that with the idea that there's people that listen to me, maybe as few as one, as I watch the numbers cascade down, that want to move forward on something and want to protect themselves, actually. When you get right down to it, I'm talking to each one of you protecting yourself in something. And the more you cloister yourself away, the more you can say and excuse, I don't have much to do, but the conflagration of destruction around you, it just kind of comes up to your door. And maybe you're going to be lucky enough to escape by then, but maybe not. And right now, the way the economy is set up, it could very well be collapsed at any time. I don't see how this thing... Well, I do see it. I told you, as soon as I saw the 2009 monetization of toxic fraud, toxic debt, I realized that this thing could actually be floated quite a long time. But I also had a realization also then, and that was late after I'd already come to the conclusion about leveraged funding and how they were doing it. Part of which, if you go to Clint Richardson's Corporation Nation, he shows you through Walter Burian's work. Interestingly, I was initially attempted to have Walter Burian. We did do the project. I did do the television. It was through public access. I gave him a project, a television program, and offered him an option to try to explain on video what he was talking about. And with this leverage funding thing, it built right into my studies. And so we watched the government through and the purveyors of all that's not good come in and infiltrate and create the infrastructure and the monetization that you pay for. You pay for all this stuff yourself through the law, so-called law, that the policy that they are bringing forward. And so then Walter Burian pops up. I said, sure, I'll do what I can. I was able to do TV production. I set up his whole thing. We did a video. It wasn't a documentary. It was just I gave him a place to get the information out that he could spread around. I don't know what happened to that project. And then a few years later, Clint Richardson finds him, and Clint Richardson does his own production about Corporation Nation, and he speaks through and into how this whole thing is wired, if you will, on the fiscal side. And so you could see that there's an inbred thing. They call it capacity building. It's inside the system. It's a cancer inside the system and they've learned how to make it look like government. By the time 2013 comes around, I'm noticing what's going on. I'm looking for that leverage funding. I told you the lawsuit of JMD against the Bar Association and the political parties and a couple other entities focused. It started on the leverage funding fraud because that's how they were funding, appropriating money wrongly to affect sustainable development, which is the international thing we all hear about, Agenda 21 and all that stuff. And this is why you can come down to today, the 20 years later, but the decade after that, as I was telling you, it's really in the books, it's all sitting here ready to implement on December of 2019. That now we get the facade of public health, and really nobody really wants to address this, and I don't know why. This is really their Achilles heel. Not just disregard some of you that really are trying, and you're finding out the latest email I've had was a very interesting response for the public health official. And so, and in that regard, we got to be careful not to ask too many questions and give them the out. You give them the door out. So here, William Shakespeare dies, not the guy that wrote did all the writings and stuff. No, a gentleman is 81 years old. He dies. The interesting story about this is the fact that they keep these people that are in the public sphere, in the information giving sector, the promotion, the perception management get the first in. And I only took notice of it because it said that William Shakespeare, first man to get COVID jab, they're not even calling it a vaccine, dies of unrelated illness. Yeah, we all laugh, we chuckle, but okay, this is the whole point. The first man to receive a coronavirus vaccine has died of an unrelated illness. I'll say it again and again. It's the Pfizer. No, silent P's here. So we have pharmaceuticals and all that stuff. The P's are silent. The pharma industry. They tell us everything if we just kind of look at it. Pfizer-BioNTech jab. You'll never see it defined as a vaccine. I'm pausing, folks. I just sit here and I just wonder, are you listening to how they're doing it to us? And why isn't anybody, I guess that's really what I get lost in, why isn't anybody responding to this? It's not that they're lying, that it's unrelated. We know it is. Can you put it together to protect yourself from this thing? And I say, forget about this. Oh, no, this is where they're going with it. You can't get in an argument and win this argument. You have to go to the first step they violate. And now we're finding out it's making the better sense. As I started out to say, generally, because I really thought more people would show up, if everyone started sending in letters, it would be a mass of information. You would all find that there was no report by a medical professional in the state pursuant to the law. And now, and then we moved along, no one did that. Then we're finding out more how they're responding and how it looks like you need to do is ask about you. And so I changed that for you. I said, make your letter to find out if there's a medical report on you, and then go through the list of four or five things in your state for communicable disease and make them admit they've either done that for you, against you, or by you, and provide a due process or not. And once you get that, you got that letter, now you got yourself in a position that you're going to be able to address not the mitigation for the vaccine and all, but that you're not a risk to the public that they can even say. And it's come down to where most people rely on, like the courts did, they breached their trust. They just relied on the governor determined. They didn't even look and don't care to look into whether or not a determination was based in fraud. And we've got the answer. They'll commit their own fraud and then protect both. To show you how dire this condition is, and people are dying here. They say it's unrelated. Well, I went to go find this story again. It was I couldn't get it. I had to find the Independence version of that where it says it's unrelated. The first link I had disappeared. The second story I found, the first man in the world to receive COVID dies. They don't say it was from an unrelated illness this time. Now they say he passed away on Thursday after a stroke. Now, if anybody's half paying attention, they should realize that these vaccines, they call them, these treatments, now we have another word, these serums, these genetic, they've even come out and said that they don't alter they don't mess around with your genes. They can't. An mRNA has to go in, and it has to be connected to the DNA of the cell when it comes together and be transfected for what it's going to do. That's what an mRNA notice to the other cell does. And so when you understand this, you realize as soon as they say the word, they're criminals committing a crime against you. But now we see that the guy died of a stroke, even some time after. Well, that's anybody with half asleep will be hearing that these serums, these treatments, these softwares of life, they cause stroke. They cause not the stroke. What they do is they cause a blood clot. And that causes the stroke. And so we got to be careful here. I even had to check myself here on this. They're not causing the stroke. The stroke's like a symptom of an underlying cause. And this is what I want you to start to be understanding about when they come to do anything or continue this thing on you forever, endlessly. Endless diseases. They're telling us all about that. So it's a stroke. Well, they say he didn't. Essentially, they're kind of claiming without saying it now, it's unrelated, but they're not saying that, are they? They're saying it's a stroke. They're telling you what it is. You have to do the follow-up and say, well, these serums, these genetic treatments are causing this. And there's a mechanism behind that. They understood this before going in. We've talked about it as far as the industry was saying what they were checking and looking at and their warnings that they were giving relative to this. Been denied, denied, denied. Top and bottom, all over the world. Not one really looks at anybody that's going to be of any kind of notoriety in the perception management system. Not one comes in objection or question. And we've advocated this is a global, it's hard to believe. I mean, I really almost can't believe it myself. This is a global plan. It's really hard to conceive of that. I barely know about the area I'm living in, let alone be conceiving of the whole world, and yet there's people that actually have their fingers in the politics of man in order to get this through. That the gentleman who got the shot, who was 81, died of a stroke, is what? Another story. Women die from rare strokes. You remember I talked about this one, too. They were going to try and diminish this thing. Oh, it's very rare. Well, a woman dies of rare stroke after AstraZeneca jab, as doctors told to be vigilant. Okay, so they're officially told to be vigilant on the AstraZeneca jab. And it says not just a woman, two women in their 30s and a man in his 40s suffered clots in their large arteries leading to ischemic stroke after receiving the jab. You don't see, again, they're not calling it the vaccine, right? And then we go to another more recent story, just to point to you, it's not the news I'm focusing on, it's this fraud and the cover-up, and it's global, that you're up against, that you're going to have to, that's why I said go local. Remember, I want to say it again, William Roberts, he didn't know this. He was not going to do this part. He was focused going local to hit politically, hit the political parties politically was inside their rules to destroy those political parties to stop parts of this nonsense. Not this one, just the general maladministration of government, which any of us must believe. I know there's lots of people that would say no government. I know why there should be, and I know why what its limits should be. If I didn't come up with it myself, we were told by the so-called founding fathers, if you listen to what they were saying, there was certain things they recognized need to be done, whether or not we've come to the fruition of that. We haven't. We don't even know how as a society. And COVID-19, so-called the fraud, COVID fraud, COVAIDs, is explaining that to me, if nothing else, to my chagrin, to my dismay. But we have more people coming to give us the idea that these things, these injections, are causing the very same thing they denied the very first guy in UK was proud to get. Final words. Model Stephanie Dubois reveals she felt horrendous and showed bruised arm in last posts before dying of a COVID jab. And you go down and read what she died of. She suffered a serious thrombotic episode and a very rare blood clot. Okay, so this, despite, you'll have to pull out the evidence for yourself, and you make sure you put it on the mitigation side. You start by saying they never did it, there's no medical report for you, there's no determination that you have a communicable disease, and you have not been determined to be a risk, and even if you were, the mitigation side of this is completely, it's founded on, it has no foundation. It's all arbitrary and capricious. And so you have to be able to protect yourself. If you listen to what I'm saying, not in describing all this, but in the direct statements, you're going to have a very short list of things to say that can put up the first defense. Because here's the point about it. When you identify also, and you have to understand this as well, when they didn't have the first medical report, and you can show, and you need to, because they will continue continue the fraud, they'll say you got your due. Inside that communicable disease process is your due process rights and remedy. And when you can identify they didn't go through it, you can also say they failed to give you the due process, the lawful due process owed, even if you were someone. Even if. I always love the even if argument. You lead with the thing that they violated, then you go ahead and admit even if you were, they still violated. And this is what I tell you about having fallback positions. Instead, you're turning around and you're putting your short sentences up forward, and you tell them how far back in the line they are, that they should never have become before they started pointing the finger at you, you asymptomatic. Now, I guess I should say, we had an interesting response on the asymptomatic. The response by a health official was that, well, chlamydia has no symptom, can have no symptoms. And that was the justification for coming after you for COVID. A very interesting maneuver, I thought. Very, very. People have to think about that in order to bring that forward. Totally irrelevant to COVID-19. But it also brings up the immediate question, well, then why wasn't there a general warrant of quarantine or lockdown for chlamydia, the asymptomatic chlamydia, since you don't know everybody could have it? It's on the list. Why haven't you done that? But that's not really the question you want to ask. But see, there's no rationale once you go one step deeper. But that was an answer. It was fascinating. I looked at that and go, what a maneuver that was. Totally off point. And then you get to learn something about the fact that there could be diseases out there that have no symptoms. But then you say, that's not part of the process, is it? Are you then declaring that everybody that doesn't have signs of chlamydia has chlamydia? It's never been done. It never can be done. And the way it's done, and now you get to have the idea, you get to say, well, okay, well, let's go back to what the law said. Do you recognize that just having an asymptomatic disease, which now we understand there could be, isn't on its own the cause to lock down an entire society? that if what it requires is then you go to that first report and then you start the investigation. Anyway, I found that fascinating. I just sat and looked at that statement that was their answer to this. I don't know why. It just struck me as an interesting thing. They have to think about that in order to bring that as an irrelevant answer. But an answer, it sounds like it's touching to the thing. Well, chlamydia is asymptomatic, can be asymptomatic. Okay, but we weren't talking about chlamydia, and you haven't locked down the entire society for it, even though there's asymptomats out there with it. Apparently we all have it. When you look at everybody in guilt, but that's not the way most places under the rule, even if it's under the rule of law. You got that? Even if we are under rule of law, which we are, but if we step into the rule of law instead of just getting into the law, we're not supposed to be infringed whatsoever. And yet we have, and yet we are. And that's the first clue you don't live in the place you thought you were, and then you have somebody that's running and ruining your life to their profit. And how anybody can sit back and realize that and still be silent or just not engage that is really, I don't know. I haven't had anybody talk to me about that to kind of give me the rationale behind, oh, we can just twiddle our thumbs once we find out that there's a threat, there's an adversary that is sitting there to take out the least among us first and continue to eat up the food chain of those that are supposedly most knowledgeable about their rights. When you didn't realize, when they started chewing on the least of you, none of you had the rights. But anyway, British model, right, comes out, social media active, tells everybody she's in hurt, horrendous hurt, and she dies. From what? A stroke. From a blood clot in this case, actually. And they just kind of say, oh, well, these things are safe. These things are, don't cause that. Oh, William Shakespeare himself died of an unrelated illness. And there were some more things about his story early on. I don't even know why they gave this guy that. I think he had some other comorbidities on top of it. I'm surprised that stroke got him in so late. A couple months late. From what most people, this young woman here, Dubois, it was just weeks. And so here, throw the dice, folks. You can throw the dice on something that can't be isolated. On something that hasn't been, most importantly, identified in you. That they're already forcing people, and we're going to come to a story where people are starting to rebel about it, but I don't know if they're saying the right thing. I've asked for something to go forward, that you need to be able to say quickly, there's no report, there's no determination of that you're an infectious principal, and you have not been determined to be a risk to the public. If I add the chlamydia thing to that, which I wouldn't necessarily if I didn't have to, then you're saying, well, so that there's other diseases that are asymptomatic and there's no way that they can cause those to be, except that someone is given a report to the public health official that you're suspected of it. Where is that report for any of you listening to my voice now or in the future? Where is that report? Is the problem. They're doing all this without that for you, each one of you. And the silence to this is deafening, and our consent is in that silence. And so here we have social media. Someone responds and says, I'm feeling horrendous. I've got bruises. You can see all the bruises in my arms. And then she's dead from a blood clot. Young girl, 39 years old, young enough, I guess. Right? Not 81. In a group of people that are really just next to not having, the survival rate is up in the 98% or so. If it isn't the 99, it isn't quite as high as the youngest ones, the 99.997. I think it's just below that, 99.95 maybe. Maybe 99, 98. It doesn't matter. This is some woman died of a treatment that killed her that wasn't necessary is the other problem. When you look at the risk that they're actually supposed to be doing. Now, social media and the perception management may be coming out, and I'm going to temper what I'm going to find. I was able to finally find the link to the Project Veritas story that's breaking, where social media faceplant itself has it is said, I'm going to have to say this because I have not, they did not provide the document to read it, and to try and validate its source. But just on a surface, I want to offer this on the surface, that you see the perception management, this is global because Facebook really has no end in any government that hasn't blocked it. This is a global propaganda campaign where with internal documentation shows how to go about censoring and or responding or treating all the, they call it hesitancy, all your wanting to fact find and tell of your truth. They have a policy list, an action plan map on how Facebook would treat the information in order to condition it or censor it. And so Project Veritas is making this claim. Like I said, I'll agree with it, I suppose, but to me, there's no source, and they didn't offer it. I looked around. I couldn't find the source of the document as far as like the copy, and then I have to take their word at their source. So be careful on this stuff, but if we can get this to be true, you see the perception management condition of a global information player happening right here. They've certainly come out and denied, but the point is that how many check marks do you make on a project plan that fits what's going on before you say, well, it doesn't matter. Whoever did it, this is the cover. This is running the perception management cover. This is how they're doing it. But anyway, utilizing the so-called statement of vaccine hesitancy, you're hesitant to engage, to consent to the fraud against you. That's a hesitancy. I think that's a valid right of yours. Another thought here, anybody, I don't know if I'm going to get to that in that thought, but it comes to me right now. I am just appalled to hear that anybody would have any argument against these giving vaccines to try and validate that they're safe against your wish to not have them. Who are these people that have risen up in the world that believe that their belief and their standings and their understanding is better than yours for yourself? Is another one of these problems. And that is going to have to somewhat be corrected. Again, these become an argument with somebody that's insane, and you're not going to win the argument with the insane. You might as well just realize that. And so you have to take not a direct approach. This is what I've been saying on and on about all of this stuff that's coming at us. The approach is to sidestep it, it's called avoiding. It's not to not deal with it. It's to sidestep it and let it go by, which means you're going to have to be in proximity to it and allow it to go by, not that you're so far away that it hasn't touched you yet, or you think it hasn't touched you. So I've been offering for over a year now how you start to think about this. I don't know how each one of you will deal with it. So I'm at a disadvantage in that regard to speak generally on this. So I just point out all the places that you might be able to pick up for yourself what you need on your list, in your things, and how you will encounter it. You will have your own dynamic on communication. That's not mine. I've told you this all before. I'm going to repeat it because these people are dying. People are dying around this. You can say you're not going to do it, this and that, and maybe you won't have to eventually. There's people around you that are not listening. I mean, I'm getting more, as time goes on, more and more people are falling. They're capitulating to the expert, the pressure, the peer pressure. And this is not really something you can gamble with. Actually, it doesn't matter who you are, you're throwing dice here. Even if it didn't do the software of life stuff, even if it was a time it stopped and it got out of your body, there's no evidence to any of this. There's evidence of the contrary of what I just said. Even if it didn't do all that, it's still not advised. And there should be there's more and more people stepping up, which I'm happy to hear. There's not nobody, but you know, there should be everybody putting forth their short list of points that destroys the condition for that, any of this to even be a conversation. I mean, I looked at some of the lists that's here. None of this list would be able to contend with what I've been promoting myself, pushing out the information I've been giving to say, go after the law. Go after the fulfillment of the law. Has it been done for you? Now, we say, you, not just everybody. They were supposed, the governor was supposed to do that kind of stuff, but they didn't. So that's why I went every, we hit the fraud for everybody. The courts came back and said for individual, the individual that was getting away from the legal terminology there, just that you, any one of you would be affected. You had to show that it was, there was no process for you. And we got that out of those court cases that said the one that the state was after hasn't been shown by the state to be a risk, to be the contagious principle, or a risk to the public. That's the short answer right there. And so I adopted that. Why? Because that's exactly what I've been saying, except I was trying to show you how you get there. The court just went right to the result. We're still there. We're going to be there. We're going to be at that point. Okay? So again, maybe all y'all so intelligent, you've got it, now you're bored, you're going away, you got it, you're just sitting there drumming your fingers waiting for them to knock on the door. I don't know. I don't know what people's thoughts are here. But I don't see it ending, and I don't see it ending in a big way generally still. I see people now coming up to argue, but I don't see them arguing the right point, which means that I still have a place to talk about this and hope people will help me get the word out. It's a diminishing return, no doubt, but hopefully it just takes a couple of us. It just takes one of you in the right spot. And I mean, it doesn't have to be everything. It just has to be in the right spot for the right thing, whatever thing that is. There's lots of things we could be working on. Shocking live. No, so here we have this, how we're going to go after so-called vaccine hesitancy. And really what it is your hesitation to walk and aid and abet fraud against you. And I wish people would think through that so they would have that phrase, that kind of a phraseology for themselves, if not that one, one very similar, so that they can address someone's allegation that somehow you're a criminal for having an opinion that doesn't want to go walk with a crime, and how dare you out the crime and arrest it? How dare you? That's what's going on when they use the word hesitancy. They're condemning you for wanting to arrest a crime. That makes them an accessory. We just work this through, folks. It's very simple little words. It all depends on what you want to say and who you want to say it to. And I told you, you want to be working with people that will be workable with you. You don't want to get into fights with people. We want to still live together. We need to get through this thing. I would hope that we get through this thing with a better awareness that there are people in the world well-placed globally that can take out nations almost at will at this point. And it's through a process I've watched go on, and I don't like to use the term like Agenda 21 or A2030 too much, but that's really kind of their action plan. So I can focus on there, but that's not really how it didn't roll down like that. It rolled down years and years and years ago, and it's already in the laws, if you will, the policies of your state. And I talked to you about savings clauses. Those are so important to bring up. And I say that the thing about what's going on like today with the COVID. No, remember I've talked to you about 1953 was a pivotal year in the country, United States, relative to the states, and at least admitted in 26, I think it was, that they got overthrown by the Bar Association. The permanent laws of the people were substituted for the new way. The new way was the adoption of corporate law into the state as law. As law, not law, as law, like as money, not money, but as money. It all correlated. It also correlated with the 1954 Tax Act, which is all the same jurisdiction. That now the states are now operating under corporate statuses that had to make records and keep books. That is the CAFR. And so we can go back and say, not just say, oh, it's the state's a corporation. We can track back how it is and who done it. And those are the criminals that are there. Those are the occupiers of your life at this point. And they are instrumental in promoting and the purveyors of this current fraud against us, which I told you was the worst thing we could be up against, given they invoke state police power. And then when you watch as soon as Washington State, their judiciary there went to this, I told you, I explained it. I said, your country is done. That state is done. When they capitulated without review of the determination of the governor, without looking at the fraud or looking at the propriety of that determination, you were done as a state in Washington, and that was going to be the dominoes that's going to collapse the rest, and you've watched it happen. Okay, so this is not just, I don't even know what to say more. It's right there for us to do. You'll complain about the government. You won't do anything to protect yourself. You are the government, actually. And what that was a mutual agreement amongst each other to be nice to each other. And when you didn't, you had at least objective basis. And that government was supposed to sit in neutrality to look over your problems with you, not become the active agent, not to become itself the principle of a contagion of corruption. Okay? We got this clear about how this is all working, and then you might say, yeah, I know that. What are you doing to stop it against you? I mean, it doesn't seem like it's on your back door, but it is. You're not free to go about the country, folks. Even people that are standing up against it, you'll hear they get beat down pretty good. And there's a video here I'll get to where she's saying that. Judy, what, Mikovits? She says that. I stood up, but they mistreated me pretty good. And there was no one there to protect, no one there to stop that abuse and aiding and abetting of a crime against her. Again, the fewer that there are, the fewer places we will be to be able to witness that and call it out and help protect. So here we have this perception management going on, and while there's other evidence coming, and so this is, again, another type of evidence that I would say it's information, not evidence. You would have to go back through and get the veracity of the source. Why I'm not talking to you about it, the Schwab story yet, and even still, although it's got a lot of good points and a lot of things I know is the truth, there was enough errors in it that I didn't want to purvey that. It's actually more one step removed than this story. But you want to find the origins of this data, of this information, so that you can use it for yourself. And this would be mostly in the mitigation side, where you show because that they haven't done the process of filing an initial report against you or anybody else, notwithstanding what they say about a case, that's a fraudulent statement, and made the determination that you are the infectious principal with a contagious infectious agent that are a risk to a public. They haven't done any of that. That because they can't, and we know there is no test, they don't even really know what they're talking about, and they haven't found it in you, and that's another proof on itself, that they're forcing mitigation measures that are causing, and we have shocking live blood analysis after vax, that one of the mitigation measures, notwithstanding whatever their safety assessment is, this has not been okay, this has just been authorized for emergency use, remember, don't forget about that, but they show that under dark field microscope images, as I get off of Rents.com, just links came to me that I look around and pull this together. I don't have the time to qualify the veracity of these things. I will just point out that maybe you know how to do this for yourself and you can do this. You would track back through and find out the veracity of these images that are showing pretty interesting anomalies to blood cells from people with vaccinations. My one problem was I didn't hear if anybody came in to have their blood checked from this doctor before the vax and then after the vax. I didn't remember reading specifically about that. So that was a potential problem. She was also a nutrition microscopist that did this. And so there's information that shows this is not a joke. This literally changes your blood cells. As we've heard why it would chemically, as I was talking about last week, chemistry-wise, why it would do it. And one of the pictures shows nobbies, if you will, little nodules on the surface of the cells. And they're not pointed, but you could almost see as if the blood cell was going to grow some horns on it, some little spikes. They got nobbies all over it. Instead of like a golf ball with indents, this had little nobbies all over it. Pretty astonishing. So more information here if you're going to use it. I would track it back to find out through whoever the source was to get the original documentation. And that sits in your mitigation folder if you want to go and defend yourself eventually under the question. See, that because if you haven't taken out the fact that there's no jurisdiction against you without the initiating report and determination and then the of risk to the public, you're kind of going backwards a bit to argue this first. And then it's going to be an argument. So you don't want, again, against crazy people. So you want to be well informed. You want to see what this is doing to you so you can do more information and you can build up your stack of things that have to be answered before anybody has the right. Even if, again, this is a great position, even if they had the thing against you. Because what are we looking at then? That's this potential against the risk that you're going to cause it, which you can't because it's your 99.9% survival rate, right? Why are you risking? Why is anybody risking this anyway? Certainly it didn't save William Shakespeare from a blood clot. Oh, no, he didn't have a blood clot. He had a stroke. You see how they do that? They jump you all around. All symptoms. What's the cause? It wasn't even the blood clot, was it? No. They aren't going to. Oh, we'll never know it wasn't the ejection. We could never know. That's the perfect crime, isn't it? Perfect crime. These people, I just have to give them a little bit. Evil genius is really genius. It's really kind of neat. Really kind of beyond me. I couldn't originate this stuff. I guess that's why I appreciate that. Maybe that's that psyche that's in the world to watch it. But when they started to destroy the world, the war of the world here, and the alien was them and they lived among us, maybe from the lake, we should have really rallied together to protect ourselves. And not in, I'm hearing people, again, the word unity. It's not in unity, folks. That is that's the globalist agenda. They want your unity. They want you unified with the cause. That's them. That's the Vatican as well. Don't underestimate all this stuff. It's all together. I've talked all about this over the decades now. Written about it before and so it gave me the line in on what was happening. Even if I can't speak chemical words anymore, my mind don't work that quick. It doesn't matter. I got a bead on them. I got the bead I have is on them. If it's not, it may not be the complete bead, but it's that bead on them. And I've just been asking people, step up, learn how to get this in your mind. Look, arrange your thoughts in a certain way, not just claim your critical thinking. Put it all in application and build yourself a position that they cannot prevail against. And that, the way you destroy that first is attack the jurisdiction. You attack it you don't attack it like a battle. You say you just don't have, because they're coming at you is really what's going on. They're committing the trespass, and all you're doing is you show in a very short summary, no, 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 you can't come that far. As I was telling you about the right of ingress and egress that I've written here a couple years ago, how I learned how to look at this through the grant law, through the mining law. You say, no, and then I explained summarily, of course, how even the administrative law, administrative world of the government cannot touch. I explained how you do that. Right, so what you're doing is you're showing in a short, it's black and white, copy and paste, that the judiciary can't come after your position. Where you are is in a position the judiciary can't touch, and their administrative world cannot touch. The authority of their administrative officials does not rise high enough to touch that. And the pervasive, oh, we got the law, we determined the law, and the judiciary can't touch it, which shows you what the highest law is. If they can't touch that law, the highest law is your documentation of grant in you. If they can't touch it, then who is the highest law? Who has the highest law? And that's innocence. So, anyway, there's a lot of ways to get at it. I don't know if people appreciate what I'm saying. I'm attempting to try and show you make records that you make avoidances that can't happen. You can't get engaged. This is not about learning. You have to know this stuff because of the criminality. They lock you down. They deny you this and that. So you just have to have more in your arsenal. That's what makes it more complicated. But when you bring out the fact that they don't have jurisdiction and they trespass, they can be made a party to the record that you're making of that. A lot of people will scoff at that, but that's a big deal. And I've told you some of the successes I've had about that. One in particular was going after the Forest Service, that they tried to come after our claim. They tried to do what they did to other miners. And instead of being quiet and not knowing what to do, I responded to that first letter, and I pointed out 21 pages of how they were wrong. And before we could move on, they were going to have to correct every bit of that 21 pages of wrong that they had done. Okay, so there's a way to get at it. We've crickets on that part now. Well, not quite. We did have a little, they did try to lock us out of the road, landlock us out, but that didn't last real long. I told you that one too. And so there is a way to get at this, and the way it is functionally is to destroy the presumption that they have a jurisdiction. It's how I told you to start in the communicable disease law. There's steps they have to take, and in the absence of those steps, they don't have jurisdiction. I'm not even to their authority yet. Their authority allows them discretion. That's when you attack the mitigation. But if they don't have jurisdiction, they don't have the power to decide. They don't have a power to make that determination because they never got that first report. For you, they are always working outside of the authority. Again, that's the color of the authority that they're operating on. That's a fraud. That's a crime. That's extortion. That's conversion of your rights or property. Or your appurtenant rights, as I had to write earlier this week, this weekend. Remember, don't forget those. That's like what Wayne Hage, he didn't understand he had appurtenant rights to the rights he had to water. I was stunned. I didn't realize he didn't know that. Years and years he's been fighting in the courts and doing really well for himself. This is not a judgment against him. But sometimes we just don't know certain things. And what the courts focused on was his appurtenant rights were being violated, and he didn't really realize he had those. And so, wow, that's a big deal when you don't know how a right to protect. That was, you saw the government come attack it when he didn't assert back that they couldn't do that. And it just so happened a judge saw it, said, hey, wait a minute, that's an appurtenant right you're not supposed to touch. Well, good, we have one judge on one point that finally got it right. Anyway, so this is the stuff you have to know to defend yourself. You think you have a property in yourself? There's someone to come and take that away. The guys that will argue, any guy or gal that will argue that the vaccines are safe when you're saying no is a criminal. They think that they have a higher right to you than you do have for yourself. This doesn't even have to be an official. This is anyone. Any mitigation measure that someone tries to force on you, in their opinion, is a violation to you. It's a trespass to you. It's someone that thinks that they have a higher regard, a higher power in them over you than you do in yourself. And if you, as a class of people, remain silent on that, they continue to think they can do that to the next unwary victim of it. Texas, so here, now, inside, the victims are being attacked. I told you this whole condition, the global condition, is to find your necessities and attack those and pit those necessities against you going day to day. And I said that was happening in the modernization acts of all the things like housing and food security and monetary this and that. All that is what you need in a modern society. They attack it. They put conditions on it. You don't think they are. Oh, modernizing, that sounds good. No, modernizing is really going back to the feudal time, actually. But Texas, I got sent this link. Texas hospital staff says vaccine mandate breaks the Nuremberg Code. Yeah, it was a link I got. Okay, so there's finally some employees in Texas. Don't mess with Texas. Well, they're messing with you. This article says they're messing with Texas. Did Texas step up? Not actually. They're just now doing it now. Texas hospital staff, the employees, are saying this mandate violates the Nuremberg Code. Okay, so what did they just do? What did their attorney just do? Went international. Now, you could do that, but why would that be your first line of attack out there under an international law when you can focus in at Texas and say, but the local public health administrator hasn't determined any one of us to be a health risk or a contagion? Why wouldn't you just stay local to the law within? Why did the lawyer just stay local? So I've requested, and these people are on Facebook, or this lady that's got started on this, she's on Facebook. If any of you that are on Facepalm or Faceplant, if you could get in touch with her and let her know there's two things I hope that they've put. If they have, ask, maybe inquire, had they put in their petition that none of the employees has been determined to be an infectious principal or has not been determined to be a risk to the public pursuant to law and due process requirements. Can you pass the word to make sure, I hope the attorney did this, if he wants to reduce, it's astonishing to hear the Nuremberg Code being brought up. That's a sensationalism. How about if we just stay local and say none of the people, let's go to the court, what the court said, not what the guy behind the woodshed has been trying to tell you. Just go and do what the court said. Put it in the complaint that none of the employees have been determined to be an infectious principal and none of them have been determined to be a risk to the public. Now, there's other things you could say if you went through that list of communicable disease requirements as I laid them out. But those are the two minimums that I've watched the courts come back on those cases that where they didn't beat down on the business owner. Most of these are coming out of the business owners. Was the two things that the courts have settled on. And so if you could pass the word to have the attorney or this lady who's leading all this, 117 employees, going to be given pink slips. They're going to attack them in their employment. See, this is how this works, is the point I was getting to. They use the third-party attack. The businesses are doing this. Now, this one happens to be a little tougher because it's in the hospital, and they say, well, we're supposed to be the conscience of the health. Right? Well, no, they're purveyors of death. But that's an opinion, isn't it? No, they're there to protect people and help them in their health. And yet nobody in that hospital, and it doesn't sound like I saw it. See, I didn't see it. Here's the point. I didn't see it stated in the article that no one had been found to be a risk, at least in the minimum. And so what? The attorney goes to the Nuremberg Code. Why? I mean, well, it's true. There's a war against you. I guess that could happen, but you're not on an international stage. How do we know that? I can go through the whole thing over and over. I should, when I say this, especially you trivia folks that you play trivia, you should be able to give me the answer just as I'm talking. How this answer rolls right on out. It's not that hard. Well, we found out in the international health regulation, the United States put a reservation to what? The authority of the states to determine. And I told you all about what that was. Well, if the authority is reserved to the states in the United States of America, then where's the guidance from the legislature on how the executive will function? Is in your communicable disease statutes, which has a 4, 5, maybe 10 points of action that have to happen in order. And all I pointed out is where you find that, how you delineate. The more list you can have, the longer things they have to do before they can talk to you. And if they talk to you before fulfilling that list, you have a harm. See, what is kind of missed here, the fact that you're dealing with it before any of that is your infringement of your, if I can still use the word liberty. You were not supposed to even see or hear from them until they had... Even now, the diminished, what, reasonable suspicion. They have nothing. And people don't realize, see, to me, this is a big failure in people. They don't recognize that you're talking to an official is a trespass, where they have no cause, or the one that they're making is made up. You get a lot of that in traffic, but I'm not going to, let's not go there. So Texas hospital staff says vaccine mandate breaks in Nuremberg Court. How about if they said the Texas hospital employees have not been declared to be an infectious agent and are not, and declare that the vaccine is invalid against them? We don't hear that story. Big story though. People are starting to reject. What are they rejecting? They're likely rejecting the idea that maybe one of them, 117 or a couple of them, there's a percentage that they're figuring out. It becomes a higher and higher percentage as the time goes on. Some of those are people who are going to get blood clots and die. But it won't be COVID. And it won't be because of the jab, right? And so, I mean, I could read all this. People are they're being attacked. You are being attacked in your livelihoods. That's what you need to survive. You're being attacked. It's that condition where you will not be able to buy, sell, or do anything without the mark of the beast. Mark of the beast. Mark on the beast at protonmail.com is my email. mark of the beast is what I'm beating and bruising the beast with, if you all would just help to put the lashings on it. You say the mark of the beast, oh religion. Okay, you can go ahead and pigeonhole that if you want that way. Look around you. Is it happening? I don't care where the source is. Is it happening to you? Absolutely. And these people have planned it for decades and decades, way before Kobe fraud. Way before. But people are stepping up, but it seems to me the attorney they've got, with all the great power that they want to resist, aren't saying the most simplest thing in the local law to defend themselves, which is simply that the local authority, the health authority, does not have jurisdiction over any one of them, and the local employer does not have authority to impose, coerce, or extort a medical practice that's not even a medical practice at this time. Ironically, the hospital is not a licensed professional to do that. Think about that one. As an employer, if I get there today, we're going to hear about how the government lawyers, the attorneys, the bar members twist and turn. They'll say, government's proprietor, but now it's in the government capacity. It's the forked road, and they get you on either one, and you're going to lose. You got to stay to the narrow path, and that means you have to show how they don't have authority to even make the decision. That's jurisdiction. See, a court having jurisdiction is the power to decide, determine, and decide. In other words, you have a power of trial, take in the evidence, weigh the evidence against the supposed law, and then decide on that. That's jurisdiction. Within that jurisdiction, they have authority to do various things, if I can help distinguish those two words. They're a little similar, but they're not. And these little similar, but they're not conditions, is how they're leading everybody by the nose. It's how everybody just dismisses the whole thing. Oh, you can't fight City Hall, or I don't even want to try. This kind of an attack, when you don't appreciate what I said, because I can't get it. I don't understand how they did it. Global. The whole world is involved in this. How? Well, when you find out the condition of the human condition, the animal condition, and then what face plant does, you realize how easy it is to lead the horse, the sheep, the horses, the goats, to anybody, all these animals, to water and drown them. And then there's a lot of us that are looking on the side trying to warn them off, and others just don't care. Oh, let them drown themselves. Yeah, I guess there's the part of me that says that. Let them all drown themselves. Maybe the Deagle website will be right, and boy, we have a lot more elbow room. Yeah, that's a good one. But when it goes there, with the infrastructure that's built in, you're going to be easier to identify and even less defenses, because the administrative, it's not even administrative, this, I don't even know what it's called. It's just this tyranny, I guess it is. It rules the day. It's the rule. So Texas hospital staff says it's a mandate breaks Nuremberg code. Maybe that was the attorney trying to promote their cases. I've noticed the attorneys have been saying, if the case doesn't get notoriety nationwide, going to the Supreme Court not going to mean much. So maybe that's part of the game here. But I didn't see within the story that the assertion, the foundational assertion, that none of those employees have been found to be at risk of to be an infectious principal or a risk to the public. And that seems to be where the bottom line is, even if you allow that this thing is at all a thing and real. Now, what might the moving into alternatives, if we're into that side, and maybe you have this, say, well, this is all the adverse effects that you don't have a right to impose upon me without further disclosure. And then I did some research and found here's another list of alternatives. So not only am I talking about hitting the risk-benefit problem that these mitigation measures are a violation and arbitrary and capricious do, there is alternatives whether or not anybody else wants to agree. When the experts don't want to agree, then you're probably looking at evidence of a criminal. Because their job, their duty, it's a breach. Their duty was to look for alternatives commensurate with the risk. And a 99.95 or 95% even survival rate is not something you're looking at to change people's lives with your treatment imposition. nitric oxide nasal spray found effective against SARS-CoV-2. Now, I hope those of you at the trivia minds, you said, wait a minute, that's a fraudulent title. And some of you that are only half listening, you go, what? What did I say? Against SARS-CoV-2. So the title of this is even fraud. But they do offer, they think, that something works better and quicker than these jabs to stop what they think they have said and promoted goes on. Clinical trial results indicate that the SANO-tized the nitric oxide nasal spray, again, these are like pharmaceutical things that actually might actually do some healthy help for you, but this is also privatized, and so this led my mind as I started reading some of this to something else we'll get to about what I started the broadcast about looking around you in nature. Maybe there's some other things that may be helpful to you. But nitric oxide nasal spray, well, nitric oxide is a natural process in the body. Maybe you should be elevating that process in your body. That will start to help, won't it? If it starts to do, if your body is systemically saturated, if it can be, there's a process about it also. I'm kind of abusing that a little bit too. The body works in very miraculous ways when it needs to. But you make sure your body maybe has nitric oxide capacity. And you'll find out this is a very important, essential molecule in your body, but represents a safe, effective antiviral treatment that could prevent the transmission of COVID-19, shorten its course, and reduce the severity of symptoms and damage in those already infected, was announced today. So maybe if you have it in your system saturated, you have the ability to make it on demand, it'll help to reduce as a prophylactic. But this says even after you have what? The symptoms, flu-like symptoms, it'll shorten that. And it doesn't cause any of the problems. It's really just an admission of something that's already happening to your body. And the tests have been done. Here's an alternative. Maybe these Texas people, nurses and doctors and employees, maybe they understand that there's these other things. I didn't see that in the report. You can have this for you. You can go through all the numbers. They actually promote this is not a monoclonal antibody remedy. This is essentially something, just an additional supplement, and they found it very effective. Why haven't we heard about that? And you can put this in the list of what you might try once there's a report that you are needing it, right? Because they say after. You notice they started the headline with SARS-CoV-2, but they only refer to COVID-19, the symptom. So this nitrous oxide will diminish your symptoms of flu. That's pretty cool. Maybe you should look at bringing up the ability of your body to produce nitrous oxide. It's the thing that dilates your blood cells too. I mean, it's a kind of an interesting little thing that goes on. And it's part of your immune system as well. It happens to be, as you get older, you start realizing the inflammation is a problem, constricted blood cells, the calcification of the cells, which constricts their ability, infringes upon their ability to be mobile, elastic. And so my views have been looking at how that works and how to try and mitigate. They're not going to stop it, but I'm going to mitigate a lot of that. So nitrous oxide becomes one of the components you're looking at. Again, I don't necessarily believe you can target. In this case, you have to target because you have a particular adversary. But generally, you can do that to your body. Then we get this report, as I started to consider these more natural things. Aussie tests validate drug. Australian scientists may have proven what many Filipinos who use the medication know, which is that the widely available antiparasitic drug, listen to this, has always been phenomenal about this whole thing, this antiparasitic drug, ivermectin, can kill the coronavirus disease, COVID-19, within 48 hours. In other words, again, not the SARS-CoV-2. It gets rid of your symptoms within whatever's causing those symptoms. It gets rid of those flu-like symptoms within 48 hours. This caused me to believe, to listen and think more about that swab article discussing about the swabs and what they do and the lithium micro hydrogel constructions that are going on. This starts to speak to that a little bit, although that one said, I think it was in the Petri dish, ivermectin would destroy the structure that was created in the hydrogel within 10 minutes. And so we see, if that's true, we look at this, taking it in your body, it takes body 48 hours to make the same thing happen. And so, to me, I'm looking at what's the building evidence to do certain things. These are not, I gotta have to say this because it's easy to get lulled into, oh, this is what we do. These are not to be experimented with without research, without your fully as you can understanding what is going on. This is you taking on, without limited liability, direct full liability for the responsibility for your health. Though this is said to be safe, ivermectin is safe, anything can be overdone. And so there's a correlation between ivermectin and its ability to get rid of the symptoms. You would think then that it's getting rid of the whatever the cause is. And so here we have an alternative like nitrous oxide. This is another alternative. This is a thing you can take if you find out, I've been people that do take it for a few days, and then they lay off for a couple months, and then they take it a few more days, and there's a certain way to take it, and those that I've been hearing about, they're not sick. Whether or not that's doing anything, I don't know quite yet, because I'm not so sure that this thing is real more than the hype at this point. I don't say that it can't be real. I say there's a needle in the haystack of nonsense they've been telling us. As I told you back in early January 2020, I think it was, that this needle is in the haystack that can be pulled out. But as a global society, we've capitulated. So the Australian scientists have shown apparently the Filipinos have been using ivermectin. Consider that there's an alternative against the risk, and it has a risk. What is that? So I look at ivermectin, and I noticed again this antiparasitic thing. Well, there's a term in I don't know, I guess medicinal herbal technology, this term called anthelmintic. It's anti-parasitic. Helminthic is a parasitic organism. Ivermectin is an anti-parasitic drug. It's actually a semi-synthetic. Part of it's actually derived from a biological process. So I put in the word anthelmintic, and ivermectin popped right up. And because I had a thought now, I'm going to go through a little bit of a thought here quick about us and what we have available, potentially, because a lot of these things you have to go buy, and if things go financially south big time, and you're already being shoved between do you pay your rent or your power and this and that, you're likely not going to be able to go buy some of this stuff, which is also not available in the stores for a large part anyway. What are you going to do for alternatives? Like I say, why don't you do an alternative monetary system with gold and silver? Might be a good start anymore. Diversify, but make sure that's part of it for your local private contracting. That's going to be important to isolate yourself away. See, why is private contracting important? Because there's a written black and white that says that your obligation to contract or your right to contract cannot be infringed. So you have a black and white thing to go on, and not anybody's opinion. And so here we tell the story of ivermectin describing the anthelmintic and insecticidal actions and recent studies that have sought to reposition ivermectin for the treatment of other diseases that are not caused by helminth and insect parasites, they claim. If they don't know, how do they know? But a standard theory of its anthelmintic insecticidal mode of action is that it is a selective positive allosteric modulator of glutamate-gated chloride channels found in nematodes and insects. And I just said a whole lot, but when you start looking at nitric oxide and you start looking at how things are working, you're going to find calcium-gated channels. You're starting to look at the body working as an electrical being, and it works gated channels. It's like a semiconductor gate in electronics. It's a really interesting correlation. Anyway, they go through in this study. It's a study. I found it, the NIH.gov. It talks about ivermectin, the anthelmintic, that can be used in other areas. It's very effective. It's been going on since the 50s. So maybe when you get to the, even if you lose the case, whether the government has to follow the law at all law anymore, you still have the backup that says, well, not only is the risk management here is out of line, arbitrary, capricious, your treatments that are causing whatever, even if you say they're safe, they're still experimental, is out of line of what I need, and here's some alternatives. What have I ever talked to you about? When you get into this alternative dispute resolution, the guy or gal with the best alternative wins. And so I've been telling you for over a decade in how I've dealt with these things in the, through the government and Jefferson Mining District, how we approach how to offer into this Hegelian dialectic system that everyone talks about, but no one knows how to engage. They'll complain about it. They'll think they can identify it. They don't have a clue about it. But when you go and do the research on its application and you see it around you, there's a way to defeat it. And it's all about the alternative at that point. You'll watch the courts talk about this. You'll look at this in the comments, what the alternatives are. Well, one of the alternatives, what they were supposed to follow law and not touch, something they were never supposed to touch, is an alternative. Because you'll find they never talk about that. What's that? The savings clause. Is this track I'm going down with you right now relative to an attack, an infringement, an imposition that may come with the righteous people coming at you for the good of the society, telling you that what they think is better for you than what you can figure out for yourself. At that point, you're in like a hand-to-hand combat. You're into alternatives. And then you got to, then that's where you do bring up risk management against your susceptibility in the face that they haven't, even if they want to claim that they have the right to disregard law and impose guilt upon you, which is another violation right there. And then you can go and defend yourself this way by saying, well, hey, there's some alternatives. And have you, when you decided for me, did you decide relative to my risk whether these were better or not? Why do you ask that question? Because they didn't. If they're going to go ahead and the courts are going to give them authority, then you show immediately they didn't actually look at the condition. Look at you, which is really where this whole law goes. Every one of you. So I got another reading all through here. I got this other document that pops up. When I was looking at the search list, what pops up is anthelmintic niclosamide is a potent TMEM16A antagonist that fully bronchodilates airways. Why did I fix on that? You all know early on they were saying that we were having constricted breathing, people were dying, ventilators and all that. And here's a report that says that there's another anthelmintic out there that will fully dilate airways without all that nonsense. It's been known. All right, I'll just read. You can read the story. You need to actually read all of this to understand. Get the language in your mind. You'll start to understand how your body starts to work or how we believe the body works. And good enough to give you the abilities to be versed in your responsibility to yourself. But I'm focusing on these anthelmintic compounds because I know in the back of my mind it's screaming, there's plants that do that. Okay? So might we have something around us? And sure enough, it just so happened, and how this all works, providence, I guess, I happened to take a quick break. I don't know why. Oh, I think I was watching one of the deer come back through. Sneaking around, pretty interesting. I decided to go out, I think, just to take a break, a few minutes from what I do here to research and find things and other, you know, helping people and finding a better, more correct, clear path through things. I walk out the property and I look out in a wash, a creek, and I notice a tree that looks, they got bark. They all look pretty much the same in this area. I can't tell one tree from the next from the bark a lot of times unless I look very, very carefully. Well, somehow I happened to look up and started to pay attention a little bit more in the top of the tree, and I noticed that it had cascading seed pods that I had never noticed before. And so that was a new project. I went quick, went in, figured out, what am I looking at here? This is not a poplar tree, which we're full of. We have areas. This is not, again, and then I looked in and I found, well, there's a hawthorn tree in there, and this becomes very interesting because I finally realized when I'm looking, I identified that big tall tree with the cascading canoe-shaped what looks like to be maple leaf, the maple tree cascades of clusters of seed pods. They're actually just canoe shaped, not a wing. I realized I was looking into a pharmacy. Because what it turns out that tree was an Oregon ash. It happens to be the bark of which, this is where you have to be very specific on what you do, and the process becomes, we talk about chemistry, these things, you really have to know what to extract, and that becomes important here in a few minutes when I get to a story that passed through about pine tea, that you have to understand what you're dealing with. But what does this Oregon ash do? The bark is antithelmintic. Now, whether or not it can be concentrated enough to do good, this is an experiment. This is you're maybe causing talking about your life here in the question. But we have time when we don't have these problems on us to investigate. So I'm looking at a tree that I didn't even realize is there. It sits there, and all of its babies are around, too. As I started looking around, I started to be able to see, because now I'm focused on it, how blind we are until we're focused, right? This is our problem. I've been trying to get you focused on certain things so that you get target what you have to do, put that, then get it done, and then you can move on. You're done. That's how easy that is. But a lot of people want to avoid that. But this is an olive family tree of all things, but its bark is antithelmintic. It's antiparasitic. And I said, wow, after we're just talking about this, I've got trees and things, as I know this. This is not news, but what you have, I'm always looking to identify what's around me. I'm looking, I get back up out of the creek, and I'm looking back down to wonder what I'm looking at. I've got a poplar tree, which is salicylic acid, pain reliever, and some other things it does. Propolis, the resin, comes from there, for those of you that understand a little bit of that. I'm looking at a hawthorn tree. These are all really taller than I can use. They're really tall trees. The hawthorn's not real big around, but there it is. It's got its bark, its leaves. It's great for the heart. It's renowned for what it does for the heart. Again, in moderation, I'm sure. And then I'm looking at an ash I didn't know was sitting there. There's an antithelmintic that is, now we're finding these antithelmintics will attack the common cold, the flu-like symptoms. And I'm looking at a pharmacy sitting in the bottom of a creek bed. I just have to figure out how to get at it and what it is. Mother Nature's providing. And that was a very interesting find, because then I get this link, the Church of Glad Tidings presentation, A Free and Brave Part 2 session, Dr. David Martin and Dr. Judy Mikovits. I've commented on what they've done in the past, in particular Dr. Judy Mikovits explaining the science. When she turned on, you can tell she knows what she's talking about. When she turned on a couple times and listening to the interview, she goes into science mode, and watch out. She's seen, you just know she's seen and done a ton. I had a much better appreciation for what she's about. Not that I questioned it too much, because she was consistent with my meager studies. But there is some high-quality firepower here. And I say that just to say the knowledge that's coming to you is very important to understand. You need to question everything, but this one's coming at you. There's something, a force to be reckoned with behind the information. That's accurate. She said something in this presentation that was done. They're going through this COVID. David Martin, he's interesting to me. He was involved in this as an internal guy, maybe a private contractor to the government around the 1999 to 2005. He was inside there looking at this stuff. So I didn't realize that until he made that comment, that he has a very, very particular view of this as well. But getting over to something that Dr. Judy Mikovits said, and this is what's going to get us into, I said medicinals, nature provides, but I heard something that bothers me a bit that I want people to understand here, and it's had the specificity of what you're dealing with in nature and those things. There's things in nature, natural things can kill you, right? There's natural herbs that can kill you. They can maim you. And so it's not because it's natural that it's any good. It's a tool. Some are pretty benign, but everything in moderation, I would say, as well. But you also have to do the amount that's efficacious and the constituents that are the active part. Dr. Judy Mikovits said two things that caught my attention, and a couple of things, a lot of things actually, but what I'm saying for today. The first thing that caught my mind was at 16 minutes in, she talks about that they couldn't inject into anybody this material that they're talking about because it's research grade. And so this is the SM-102 component that we read last, I read to you I think it was last week or the week before, that said right at the top of the letter, which I didn't say, I was hoping people would go download that and look at it. I'd like you to discover your own truth, your own sight. I didn't say there's something, a subheading. It said right there it was just for research and institution or something grade. It was never a component to be put into a publicly made anything. It says it right at the top. She says that you couldn't inject these into the body. It's research grade. Is exactly what they're doing, which caught, you know, I just said, wow, this is a, she knows that. I mean, she knew that from her knowledge. You're not supposed to do this. And yet you're looking at a bunch of experts, slow drips under pressure, that are psychopaths, that are doing just that. They're taking research grade materials and without any testing and injecting them into people. And in fact, isn't that what that OSHA safety sheet for SM-102 said? It said that it was research grade. I don't remember the first one. There's two standards in it. So they're talking about this thing called Cerimin, which has been found by a researcher to be effective. And this is an old finding, an old, I'll say, drug, a compound that was first explored in 1916, if you do some research, and I'll have a couple links. And it was originally introduced in 1922 as a trypanosomidazole drug in cattle. It's a trypanosomones parasite, and it was done in cattle. Now, vax relates to cattle. That's where cowpox, that's what's all together. So in 1922, this was done. They found it. It's actually a dye that they use called Tripan Blue. But here's the key about that. That's what's being used in order to fight this parasite. That is the antithematic in the Cerimin that is researched to be effective. Tripan Blue, though, she makes a passing comment that it's pine. We don't get to see the other interview that happens the next day. She talks about pine needles being a source of Tripan Blue, a reagent coloring thing, I think. That, though, if you look, is a toluene derivative. It's a hydrocarbon derivative. And this is where you have to understand when you get to plants, what are you dealing with? And so there was a couple stories, and this is why it caught my mind. I go, we've got to be careful, and I want to tell people, you may think you're doing something, and maybe you're not doing the thing you think you're doing. That the stories came out, pine needle tea. Listen to this very carefully. Pine needle tea. And I don't know if this is really a disregard, this is a false psyop or what on the information. It came out pretty quick, too. Pine needle tea. Think about how you make a tea. And if anybody's tried this, it's a pretty tasty little tea, a little hot water, pour it on some needles, pine needles, and let it soak a bit, right? And then you drink your tea. It says possible antidote for spike protein transmission. According to Andreas Kalker, chlorine dioxide also oxidizes the spike protein secreted in vaccinated individuals. So this is here plan B. Okay, so be careful on anybody's suggestion about all this. And this is having to buy into this that exists at all either. So there is here plan B for all who want to protect themselves from vaccinated and from whom the daily oral MMSDS taking is too stressful in the long run. Okay, caution, folks. And they don't have MMS at hand in a crisis situation. I was talking about if you can't find ivermectin, what are you going to do when you, to me, this stops flu-like symptoms. I don't know about COVID-19 or whatever. There's no proof of that. I see lots of stories. I see there's a needle in the haystack potentially, but I'm not so sold on that quite yet. But what if you don't have something? Can you then resort to pine tea? Now, giving you the answer, you're actually dealing, the active derivative is toluene, a hydrocarbon. I found another story, which is actually a pretty informative story, and the guy's trying to be disclaiming of certain things, which is fine, but he makes a couple of comments. COVID vaccine antidote? Question. Pine needle tea inhibits RNA replication. That caused me a little bit of concern, because if you know that pine needle tea is water extract, infusion, and it's not a toluene extract, you're telling people the wrong thing. It says Suramin, and this one article, though, gives you nice compact information, so you don't have to get lost like I kind of did a little bit trying to track down a lot of the truth of some of this. Tripan blue is derived from tulidine, that is, any several isomeric bases derived from toluene. Tripan blue, and the guy that invents tripan blue finds a tripan red way back in the early 1900s, is so called because it kills trypanosomes, the parasites that cause sleeping sickness. And this was made for cows as well, remember? An analog of tripan blue, Suramin, an analog. This is a synthetic. The synthetic Suramin is used pharmacologically against, in this case it would be pharmacologically, but in healthy side, against trypanosomiasis. The tripan blue is also known as diamine blue or Niagara blue. And tripan, here it is, tripan red and tripan blue were first synthesized by the German scientist Paul Ehrlich in 1904. The tripan blue is a derivative of toluene. I want to repeat this, which is a derivative of pine oil. Here's some lipids right here, anyway, as well. And so I want to remind you here that we're talking about toluene out of a pine oil concentrate, actually. The compound was first isolated in 1837 through a distillation of pine oil by the Polish chemist Philip Walter, who named it retinaphthen. I don't know. I destroy these terms anymore. So then it says, why take Suramin when you can make pine needle tea? And then it goes on to say something here, and I want you to pay attention now because it jumps. Why take a synthetic isolated version when you can take the full spectrum natural substance? Question? The comment. Pine needle tea provides a similar, if not superior, benefit due in part to the fact that it is a direct mild extract. Mild extract is not tea. Going on, of the whole herb, leaving many of its properties still intact that might be destroyed in excessive heat during distillation and further dissection of its many nutrient components. Pine needles are high in vitamin C and A, among numerous other compounds, which provide a long list of benefits. 2011 Korean study demonstrated using pine needles in tea was the best way to access antioxidant benefits from pine needles. The study demonstrated that a hot water extract of pine needle, proanthocyanidines and catechins, offer the highest levels of antibiotic benefits compared to chemical extract processes. There are other known benefits of pine needle tea, and the tea made from other conifers share, which include, and they make a big old list. So conifers, and if you look at trees, they're fascinating creatures with a lot of constituents. I don't want to get lost in all that. They do all kinds of things, and potentially so, and I found those that I've engaged do work. They do this right. Sometimes, maybe not to the concentration that man can make. That's more study. Let me go back, though. They say pine needle tea. Understand, when they talk about vitamin C, that's water soluble. You would extract in a tea, a water extract. They call it extract, but it's an infusion. The water soluble things, like antioxidants, vitamin C being one, you will not necessarily, unless it's heat that actually causes it to come from the cells out of the structure, you will not actually extract oil by that. To extract the hydrocarbons, you need really an alcohol. And what they do in the studies is they use methanol, which you've got to be careful to deal with correctly because it can poison you. Granted, it has to take a bit. It doesn't take much. It'll poison you. But that's how you get the oil. Steam distillation doesn't use any of that. And yes, you do heat up, but you're looking at the oil anyway. So there's always a balance of how do you get what you want. You are not, to my mind, you are not going to make a water tea and extract the toluene sufficiently or any other of the toluene derivative chemicals from the needle, anything, the bark, any of it. It will sit there. It's insoluble in water. And so this is to me, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's not correct. Really consider what you're being told. This information came out that she said pine needle tea. She said pine needles, I think. I don't think she actually explains the form. But when a whole lot of people started coming, we can drink pine needle tea, I said, not actually, if you look very carefully. So pine needles have to be extracted. Typically, you use alcohol. That's what you do when you take a grain alcohol. And I typically use the Everclear style, 99%, whatever, 100 proof. As close as you can get to pure lack of hardly any water at all. And I typically don't use the vodka, which is 40%, 60% water to alcohol. Because depending on what I want to extract, I can make a variation of the extract, the menstruum, I guess they call it, to pull out what I want. So what typically also happens is that you use some of the strongest alcohol, to extract all the hydrocarbons, the resins, the oils, and all that. And then you do the water, a bath, a tea, and you extract all the water solubles. And then you mix them together to get the more full complement, if you need it. And a lot of times you do. They'll admit when you reach through some of this, you're also going to be told these things work with synergistic effect of all their components, not just the singular pharmacological thing. And so I wanted to caution people, there's an answer in the bit of this, but I think people are taking, even if they're good-natured, and these are not PSYOP articles, you have to be really, really critically think about what you're watching. And again, this is such a dangerous thing. You could be thinking you're getting so-called the curcumin or whatever, the toluene extract, and you're not. In fact, toluene's very vapor. If you walk by, you smell trees, you're probably smelling a component of toluene. It comes off the trees as a vapor, if you will. And so it's volatile in that regard as well. And so there's special ways to go and do it. For a quick extract sealed up, you can make this stuff, but then you have to consider how much do you have? What's in there? Is it sufficient to do what it's supposed to do? So I've given you links here for where Ceramin, it's just a Wikipedia. You can read about it. I think it's very important. What you'll see is that it also causes all the side effects of COVID-19, this material, Ceramin. All this stuff will have potential side effects. So this is where you get the idea they're putting these things in your body and you're getting COVID-19 symptoms. Because your body's an immune system is working to have to put up with all this stuff. Then I found this other thing interesting, and I wanted to kind of focus a little bit on the things around us, or what we can make around, have around us. And I'm kind of in a hybrid gardening. I try to find what the deers don't eat. So far, my oregano works, my onions work, which are cool. All that stuff is cool. But the strawberries, I got to be careful of. They like to eat those. They don't eat the wild strawberries. No. Right behind there. No, they'll eat all the ones I make. But anyway, so I'm working on what is nature. Doesn't eat what I can use, and what does nature provide naturally that grows really well? So I'm still looking, quite a long analysis on how to work that out. Well, looking in and looking through the information, a book came up that's available to us. It's something, I can't remember now, an Encyclopedia of Parasitology or something like that. It has to do with a guy who wrote the book about how this is all done. And interestingly, I found in researching off of archive.org it's a copyrighted thing, but they give you little views here and there. If you right-click in the search side, you'll be able to find the source for your searches. And what popped up was something I found interesting. You can grow around you. Likely the deer won't eat this either. Now, whether or not anybody can make a concentration, I don't know, but you'll find that it will require getting to the oil, so a steam distiller may be an option. Again, what am I talking about? Nature around you provides things that if you have a knowledge, if we were all the natural chemists we ought to be, not taught about, you know, common core math and all this other stuff, and how ecology is this and that, and superfluously looking at the world, but actually put our fingers in all the way up to the elbows of life and how it all works for us, and how we can make it work, allow it to work for us, not make it, but allow it to work for us, we would, I think we'd have a much better lifestyle. But under Surinam analogs, remember we talked about analogs, what came up was, and I'm going to cut back down, they go through a couple of them, the inhibition, it's an inhibition of lipid metabolism in the trypanosomes, in the parasite is what, this is inhibiting this, these analogs that do this, though, so they interfere with that parasite's life, and may be central to therapeutic effects of the garlic extract containing dialyl disulfide. I always love these sulfides. Sulfur is very interesting. It's got 4 valence electrons. In other words, it can receive or give depending on its state. So it's like, if I will, this, it's not the same. It's kind of like a catalyst. It's a very amenable molecule. I've always liked sulfur. Okay, no, I'm not that deep in the ground. But anyway, so the compounds of sulfur, this DAD, they call it, is known to have a lipid regulatory effect and a sulfur-rich compound that readily undergoes ionic interaction with the SH, being a vital component of coenzyme. Here's the synergistic part of it. The latter is required in growing cells for the provision of activated acetate. We heard that last week. Acetates are important. Molecules, which are then channeled into lipid synthesis and other cellular processes. So the cells are actually doing this work. I have a link to the Wikipedia on dialyl disulfide, and it happens to be from garlic, distilled garlic oil. Here we have, again, an oil. Water will not draw this out. Only if the heat is there and it can kind of get out at the time you make the tea. I don't know how many people would do this. And this has its own problems, so you have to be careful. What I found interesting, as an aside a bit, it is produced during the decomposition of allicin, which is released upon crushing garlic and other plants of the family Alicea. Now, I remember somebody, and I don't know who the host was, advertising allicin C, very special compound they were talking about. Well, here it is. It's derived in the crushing of the molecule of garlic. You would probably have a special handling for this to get the allicin that you need. It comes out, and it's it's the primary product from which you get this very effective coenzyme production that helps fight the same thing that these people in pharmaceuticals are creating, that you might be able to find local to you that you can grow. Yeah, a lot of work. But what's your life worth at some point? If you make that a natural part of what you're doing, instead of the unnatural part of what you're doing, then maybe it just becomes a part of your day. It becomes part of a time in your life. Like right now, I did a primary of an initial harvest of the oregano that came to bear. I did a selective harvest. I'm waiting for the rest to come up, and it's about ready now to, it's about the time of the year to, I'll be doing the second harvest. And I'll just, that's just a day, so many hours I pull out to do the harvest for the oregano I need for a year. And so that's kind of how, if you can build that in, you know, that becomes more important because, well, I don't have to buy the oregano. I don't have to, and it's healthy, and I know where the source is, and oregano's cool. Oregano oil is even cooler. So here we have more things around you that we can derive if we need it. So instead of, if I was going to harvest, which I won't because I don't really need it, if I was to harvest the oregano, I don't even know if it's the right type for that anyway, I would take a portion of the harvest and I would distill it. Or I would extract it with alcohols, and I would probably actually make the full body, make it, then do it with water, and I would just have an extract, a hybrid, if I wanted that, the constituents from the oregano, which is another antihelmintic when you get to it. So there's lots of things available. I offer you, through Google, which I don't normally do, a book. This is the Encyclopedia of Parasitology, and you'll talk about, and you have to go through, click forward and click back on the pages, because they say some of them are not available because they're on copyright, but they'll show up if you go back in a small window, and you get the link I'll give you, but go forward, and I think you'll start getting page 475 and on, and read about this. It's the science behind this stuff. It's a recent publication. You can see where it's involved, and I look inside the read between the lines, and you'll see that nature does a lot of this too. So I just included all this for those that want to take the responsibility to make available to themselves, not just this COVID nonsense, but actually something that looks, a lot of these flu-like symptoms are caused, the symptoms are reduced just by using what you think would be an antiparasitic. And they're all around us, actually. So I wanted to offer all this. If you could, again, if you just stay healthy, there's not going to be a question. You know you have no questions. In fact, one of the alternatives is that they haven't shown that what you've been doing, and if you've been documenting some of this, isn't itself the security that's needed relative to what they're claiming. So, again, the more you'll do to be responsible, the less handhold someone can have on you to try and drag you into their jurisdiction, and plausibly, not rightfully, but plausibly so. And so, again, this is just a way of thinking on how you approach it. I'm not saying you get an argument. What you do is you have a battery of evidence and protections and a word in your mouth about how you'll just eventually show you've been the one that's thought about it, that's done things, that's put yourself, that invested the time. Because you can guarantee that, and this is one thing I can tell you, with hardly anybody doing anything to defend themselves, you will be a class unto yourself. There's likely nobody that's going to be doing the work that you have done over time, every day, just a little bit every day, figuring stuff out like I do. I didn't even know. I've been looking at that tree for years, didn't know that that's what that was. Happened to there. At any rate, so there it was. Now I know I have another thing if that's where I want to go, which is likely what I'm going to be looking at some things. I always, like I told you, I've got three trees right together that look like a medicine cabinet. I'm thinking, wow, that is a very cool set of functions that those barks, at least those barks, do, that I think I'm going to have available to me, like I would anything else that I'd rely on. So, I've gone through a whole bunch of stuff here. We're still in the problem. We have the ability, I think, that as I was thinking about some of this thing relative just before the Texas doctors are talking, you know, they're never going to talk about that as a defense. You didn't hear it in the article. And yet here it is for you. See, that's another way to keep you from, if you will, not think about, oh, they're going to defend themselves. Oh, you get into the, rah-rah, let's hope the best for them. But you still have the daily thing. If there's this needle in the haystack that I was talking to you about, which I do believe there is, even if it's not, they'll give it, they could be anything. They have technology now that appears to be devastating if they need to wield it out. You're going to be needing to defend against that. And you're going to need to do it without necessarily any support or advice from anybody. And I just noticed today, this week, when I was looking at all this, quite a few things tied together, pulled together. A lot of it's in nature that we can kind of do for ourselves. Yes, I have a little bit more study to do on the proper extract and concentration. I still have to make an analysis of, can it be concentrated enough? And then I'll have whatever. Now, I don't have a symptom, so I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but I'll have to do some basic testing. There's ways to do that as well. Some of this may not be good for me. I don't know. In fact, the garlic derivative, it can cause trouble if you're not careful. So, but again, this is the problem that the pharmaceutical does. That's where they wrap the synthetic modeling in a lipid, because they got to protect. See, that the SM-102 is a contact killer. They had to put that in a bubble of oil. And so nature can do the same thing. It can harm you really well. Although there's a plant, I can't remember, I think you have it over in the east of the United States. You touch it, you blister terribly. Well, poison ivy is a minor part to this other one. I don't know, pigweed or something. I don't know, it's not pigweed. But there's a seriously terrible problem that people respond to. So nature can harm. Anyway, there's lots out there that it can help. I wanted to caution, it's not pine needle tea as my study is doing. Don't rely on the tea. You have to understand more about the extract through an alcohol in order to pull out those effective hydrocarbons. Now, if you understand what I said, now you understand why the oil industry and pharmaceuticals got so big, because those are the types of hydrocarbons that comes with oil, petroleum industry. That's why they can do all this. It's synthesized. They just shift molecules around. But nature does it too. That's likely why it's all there. It's all natural. But again, you have to be careful on what you do. So moving over now into, you know, to protect yourself against these idiot, insane, I know better for you than you do yourself, and I have a higher right of the property over you than you do your own property, you. Moving into protecting yourself, you're supposed to have a right of self-defense and all this other stuff we're told. I'm going to move into something I did not get to last week, because we changed up just a little bit, but it's still a responsibility that's being, it's still a duty for you, to yourself, and it's supposed to be your right, which was not supposed to be infringed. Which is at every turn, and I've explained a lot about this, not totally, and then there's a lot to be said, and there's a lot that needs to be worked through. But you're watching, again, the government gives itself a place, and there is a check and balance, and luckily, there's still minds in the judiciary that are prevailing enough to continue to hold to a law, however diminished it is now. I want to move into something I talked about a long time ago. I think this is the story where I told you they were talking about community caretaking. And I said how dangerous that was. Community caretaking is like, this is the do-gooder attitude. The state and the government and the local government and the cops have a right to care for y'all. And this is an important, I talked a little bit about that. I said, we'll see what happens. It's the Coniglia versus Strom case. Well, it had a decision a little bit ago that I want to touch back. It does put a limit on the caretaking function of the government relative to your house. And they agree, the Supreme Court agrees, they've made encroachments, reasonable encroachments. Remember, the catch-all problem here with the constitutional problem is they put the word reasonable as the weak link to your rights, to protecting your rights. They've allowed, the Supreme Court, the Bar Association has allowed reasonable encroachments to your right to be secure in your property, but they have in the Coniglia case confirmed you have the right in your house against unreasonable searches and seizures. And this case was where the husband, I told you, I didn't like this case because it's usually taking, it's an issue, a condition where it doesn't get to the issue correctly and directly. It goes through really a nonsensical matter that you hope that the court treats it correctly. It was a husband and wife got themselves in a dispute. The guy was called, said that he was, it's like a red flag law. Well, this guy, my husband, is crazy or whatever. And so the cops came and he made a condition that he would go with them and they would search as long as they didn't take his guns. So they promised and then they went in and they took his guns without reason. There's a whole other story, there's a whole more story to this. This case goes through, they took his guns and so he sued. Again, these are trespassers ready to take from you. And this is the problem. You're right. When you see that your rights are not protected in the first instance, you have to understand you're not living in a place that you're free. This is the problem I've been telling you about. You can't just be absent about this potential. These red flag laws as well are most difficult. In reading the story, in Garza versus Idaho, Justice Thomas articulated the framework that reconciles stare decisis and originalism. If there is little available evidence suggesting that certain precedents are correct as an original matter, the court should tread carefully before extending our precedents in this area. I have suggested that the lower court judges could adopt a modified version of this theory, which he has a link to. Justice Thomas's majority opinion in Coniglia versus Strom represents a subtle and unanimous victory for the Garza principle. This case declined to extend the so-called community caretaking exception to your rights, to the context of homes. here is the introduction of the decision. It goes on and says, explains another authority that they did. It called a case in Cady versus Dombrowski. And that was the case that they started this whole thing of, that you start to see that the courts will go and use these cases wrongly while they violate your rights. And it takes all the time, all this time, and somebody to filter through to then carve out that little bitty bit that's left to you while everybody else is being violated. And to me, I told you this a long time ago about community caretaking, and people die around this thing. Well, maybe not a couple more, and maybe won't, relative to this new decision. The community caretaking, essentially, the way they were the courts were deciding it was to extend what happens to a motor vehicle, what they did in preserving evidence in a motor vehicle stop in the Cady case, does not extend to the house. They say the home here, that's your tax home. So don't underestimate what they're actually saying. This is really the article talking through that. I'd have to go back to the decision, which I do have for you. I have to go look at that. They don't talk, they don't never, ever mention these things. But the community caretaking cannot rely on the precedent that applies to a car. And they have held, the Supreme Court justices have held, your house means something, and they do need a warrant. And what the cops did was a violation. They really didn't have the right to even ask the gentleman. He should have just walked out, and they should have left it alone. But when you have, the point in my mind was, when you have officers that would ask and then violate, that's a clue right off its bat. That they even have an interest in the house is a problem. You have a police force in that area, and likely everywhere, that has taken it onto themselves to believe that they know better the law than you and your property rights. And they use that as a presumption against you. And then you have to fight. And this is one of our main fights in all of this. Why I say you don't get your rights until after you can defend them. It means you don't have them. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to defend them. It's why I tell the minors that we have a property right that's granted to us, yet as soon as someone comes aggresses against us in that property, we have a violation. We are harmed. We don't have to prevail there. But the fact that we can't enforce that is where the wheels come up. But nothing in the first instance on the side of the people. I'm going to read the holding. This is the only real thing that you can rely on in this case as far as giving authority to some other court. My mind keeps saying, but remember, all these cases up until now were harming people, allowing the cops to invade the home and do all this stuff under the color of an authority that never existed. This is COVID-19. This is just the extension. In this case, COVID-19, we found, at least in one state, the Supreme Court itself would commit the fraud and then cover for the executive. That shows you live in an occupied state that only appears to have a tripartite government, and in fact is not. But getting to the holding in this case, and that's I'm reading directly from the Supreme Court holding, held neither the holdings nor logic of Cady justifies such warrantless searches and seizures in the home. Cady held that a warrantless search of an impounded vehicle for an unsecured firearm did not violate the Fourth Amendment. In reaching this conclusion, the court noted that the officers who patrol the public highways, in quotes, public highways, are often called to discharge non-criminal, quote, community caretaking functions, such as responding to disabled vehicles or investigating accidents. But searches of vehicles and homes are constitutionally different, as the Cady opinion repeatedly stressed. So not only do you have courts that since then have been wrongly applying Cady, they didn't even read Cady. And this is another one of our problems. We're forced to have to do it, and then what you're going to be told, as we have repeatedly been told for decades, and recently in the Tennessee case, oh, your objections are not well taken. By this, you know you're in an occupied country. And then you get the supposed Supreme Court coming back later and saying, oh, no, yeah, you're not supposed to do it that way. The very core of the Fourth Amendment guarantees is the right of a person to read. Listen, folks, the right of a person, okay, get rid of that one, a right of a person to retreat into his or her home and, quote, there be free from unreasonable governmental intrusion. Okay? So your e-government blows all the heck right here anyway. But anyway, number six, a recognition of the existence of community caretaking tasks like rendering aid to motorists in disabled cars is not an open-ended license to perform them anywhere, vacated and remanded. And so this had an underlying thing about the firearm, which has got me onto this other stuff, looking around about, okay, what's the most recent issues about these guns? I told you they're going to come and take your guns incrementally through all this stuff, and they go after right at the point where they know right to go after what you're going to need to do in a day. And this one was particularly heinous because it attacks right at what you need to do if you're going to engage with the government and how they're going to now take your right to bear arms, and they have now have a precedent. When I found this, it surprised me, actually, because I've done this over and over. Not recently. I don't go down and then go out too much, but this one, gone postal, SCOTUS refuses to consider post office gun ban. A story you can find, the SCOTUS made a big mistake, is the opinion here. That won't be a mistake relative to what they're going to do. SCOTUS turned down the opportunity earlier this week to hear a dispute over whether guns can be forbidden from post offices, upholding the U.S. Postal Service regulation that bans guns from post office property. The problem with this is they're extending that post office property to the parking lot. And so those of you that think you're sitting by, you got gun rights, and you think it's not incrementally being taken, as I've told you it was going to be, this case is one of those cases that's going to start to do that. In this case, you're going to find out how they claim that the post office, which is the Postal Service, this is the other lie, it's the Postal Service, I think since 1971, it's not the post office. Your post office is a place inside the Postal Service. There's but one location in there. At any rate, now they've extended that you can't even drive on the property because their regulation as a proprietor to you can stop you from exercising your right to bear arms. And yet in the same decision, they agree that it's a governmental instrumentality. It's crime. It's crime under color of law. Can you carry a gun at a post office? No. Don't walk in. I don't care what you got, folks. You can't even get onto the postal, into the parking lot. Don't do it. If you get caught, they're going to nail you with this thing. And now I want you to ask you, where's your right to bear arms on a Postal Service facility building where they have been given the right by regulation to take out what shall not be infringed? No guns at the post office, says U.S. Court of Appeals. That was the case, I got a link of it, leading into the Supreme Court that would not take this decision to reanalyze what has gone on and to protect the right to bear arms that shall not be infringed. It's going to be infringed. I have a lot of questions on this, and because I used to come out of the claim, go right to the post office and make a filing, and I come out of the forest with my gun. I walk right in there and never had a problem. Walk right back out. It's not even a thing, right? No, right now I'd be a felon. Now, how do I go from the forest? What provision is going to be made for me? Where do I put? They say, you can leave it at home. No, I can't. I can't leave it out in the forest. I can't walk, and then where's my right to protect myself between there and there? And no, I can't just drop it off at a parking lot near me. Why? That's going to allow for potential for theft. But this is how they've encroached on your Second Amendment right. Get the links, get to see. Pretty astonishing how they're going to encroach back, not listening to the Constitution one little bit. Grimner, thank you for what you do at reallibertymedia.com. And thank you for allowing us the space and the time and all your efforts to keep it going. And everybody, the syndicator, and all your comments that might come. Thank you very much for what you do there. And the syndicators that get the word out, I appreciate it. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
foot opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.